Yeah.
I assume it's fine. Should we wait a couple hours?
Perfect. I'm going to start. So yeah, I'm going to do a talk on IPv6. That's just the people are coming in here. On IPv6 and Kubernetes. Let's just get started. So first of all, who am I? I'm from Norway. I work as a platform engineer, DevOps, those things. So I cleared the first Golden Kubernetes in Norway, meaning I have all the CNCF certifications, a lot of them. I've been using IPv6 at home since like 2013, so a while now. Have my own ASN, kind of a nerd. So let's first start about IPv4 or the legacy IP. It's basically the core networking protocol today. It was standardized in like 1980s. It's been around for a while. Most of you are probably pretty familiar with it. Pretty standard IP of like dot decimal and 32 bits. The biggest issue with IPv4 today is its size. There are 4.3 billion addresses. And that's less than the current world population, which is like a lot more people. And most people also have multiple devices. And the workaround for that is today is we come for something called NAT, which is basically a way to hide multiple users behind the same IP. This brings a lot of complexity, a lot of limitations, and it works, but it's kind of a hack that it had to do because of your out of IP addresses. So we're starting with IPv6 now. Cloud providers like AWS in 2023 started charging for public IPv4 addresses. More and more ISP are now resorting to what they call carrier grade NAT, which basically means that you have multiple layers of NAT. It's even more complexities and brings a lot of issues as well. And if it's having like a lot of end users behind the same external IP. And you also have things like services having rate limits, like docker.io, we have 100 pulls per IPv4 address if you don't authenticate. So this can be issues when you have all the same users behind the same external IPv4 address. Also if you want to get an IPv4 today, this is the REAP. If you want to get an IP, and the queue is like 500 days plus a sort of time. You can see it's just growing and growing and growing. So basically, we are out of IPv4 public addresses. We have to buy it if you want something today. And it's quite expensive. So the fix is basically IPv6. It was implemented in the first draft was in 1998, so it's not something new actually. There are a lot of new things about IPv6, but the biggest one and the most important one is the larger address space. So we have 128 bits. Because the Windows knows basically bitmap knows that that's a lot larger. So this is the number of IPv4 addresses, 4.3 billion around. This is the number of people in the world currently, at least my last Google said so. So approximately. And this is the number of IPv6 addresses. So it's quite a lot larger. And that's something we're going to run out of anytime soon. And it can probably sustain us a lot of years into the future. I'm not going to try to pronounce the number, but yeah, it's a lot larger. Also some visualization, if you imagine this is in space. We have like this tiny, tiny dot, red dot there that is IPv4. And I have this huge circle being IPv6 address, so it's quite a lot bigger address space. It's based on hexadecimal notation. I'm not going to go into the details here, how to do it, but some of you have probably seen an IPv6 address. There's basically no need for NAT to extend the address space. There still is some NAT, can be some NAT here and there, but at least for extending the space, there's basically no need. This is the stats from Google from yesterday, I think. They're close to 50% adoption. So end users are slowly getting there. At least in the last 5 years, there's been like a 20% increase, so hopefully it will continue at that speed, at least for a while. So yeah, end users are getting there. And also Bedroom is actually at 71%. This is quite good, above average. So the issue is I'm a Norwegian, so I look into a lot of Norwegians websites. Like Norwegian banking is like 19% support IPv6. IT companies, this is just the front page. It doesn't, it's just like the very basic IPv6 support. So Norwegian IT companies like 35%, major website 36, public services 50%. But if you also take into account that there's actually a law that says that public services needs to be IPv6 ready, 50% is kind of bad if there's a law that says that you have to do it. And like the biggest one, like if you are the developer, is like GitHub doesn't still support IPv6. This is kind of sad. So shame on all of them. This basically means that you need to run dual stack. You need to support both IPv6 and IPv4 for a while. So if we have something called dual stack, it means that we run both. You have an IPv4 and an IPv6 address. And you can use either. So if depending on what your destination is, you can use IPv4 or IPv6. But this means that you need to have a DNS record for all the services you want to use in both. More than operating systems prefer IPv6 or IPv4, but it's not guaranteed. It's like sometimes it's preferred to use IPv4, even if you have an IPv6 connection. And it adds a lot of complexity, since you now certainly have two stacks. You need to secure both of them. You need to think about security products and firewall rules and everything for both of the stacks. And troubleshooting can be harder, since you might end up with some traffic on IPv4 and IPv6. And yeah, it's more complex. For clients, this is mostly still needed, unless you have something called IPv6 mostly, which is actually in use on the Wi-Fi here. So if you have an iPhone, you can actually see that you don't get like a super weird IPv4 address. And they actually, you don't only get like a public IPv6 address here on your iPhone. It is super cool. For services exposed to end users, this is still needed, since only around 50% is support IPv6. But servers that mostly talk to each other, then why do you need both stacks? If you have a database server that's only supposed to talk to a backend server, why do the database server need to have IPv4 and IPv6? There's basically no need for it. So getting into Kubernetes, IPv6 only Kubernetes has been supported for a while. This basically means that the pod and the service only have an IPv6 address. Dual stack was implemented a while later in Kubernetes 1.23. This means that every pod gets an IP from each family. So we basically have a dual stack, as we mentioned. And then Kubernetes services can be declared as both single or dual stack support for them. And it also means that each pod have an IPv6 address. Can be a public IPv6 address. That means that you basically still need to think about security, since it's public IPv6 address, but there's no need for not. So you can basically have end-to-end connectivity behind your pod and your end user for the service. This talk is mostly about how running your own Kubernetes setups, but I like to mention what is supported in the cloud providers. Amazon EKS, they have support dual stack for a while. GCP support dual stack, and Azure support dual stack, but kind of we are nothing anyways in there. And there's like mixed merit between the providers, and not everything is supported always, and you can find bugs that doesn't support the existing IPv4. And there's still some issues, but at least they do support it. So yeah, I mentioned public or public prefix. You can also run IPv6 on a private prefix. You can basically have the same as you have in IPv4 in the RFC 1918. That means that you just need some sort of NAT or some sort of proxy or something to reach outside of your own network. But it brings a lot of, I want to go into some of the details. So you have a public prefix. You basically need to get the public prefix from your ISP or a cloud provider or some sort of, you have to have a prefix allocated to you. Then you would divide that prefix up into multiple smaller prefixes, and you will allocate it each, configure it in the Kubernetes. Then you need to route the subnets to the nodes using BGP. Most the CNI support it. Also here, because I'm kind of issued security open by default. So if you just deploy a Kuban cluster with a public IPv6 prefix and you have no firewall between, all the ports have direct connectivity to the internet both ways. So you can have someone from the internet talk to a pod without anything between them. So you need to have some firewalls or something between there as well. Get a private prefix. I mentioned here useful for isolated clusters, between that you don't need to have some BGP support. So if you have like a home lab, it can be difficult to have BGP support on your home router, perhaps. So you can do run a private prefix. You can use the basically use of the unique link local addresses, like RFC 1918 IPv4. But that means that you still need to use NAT or proxies or something like that for external access. To enable dual stacking Kubernetes, this is not just on the different components, the example of kubeadm deployed cluster. Just define the prefixes to the API server and console manager and the proxy. And yeah, it should be supported, and you need CNI support. And a CNI is just standard for how container networking in Kubernetes works. So it defines how a pod gets an IP address and connectivity, and also where we see what IPv6 features are available. I've been using Cilium, which is an open source CNI with eBPF support, or based on eBPF. They support IPv6 only and dual stack clusters. They do IPv6 aware load balancing, provide, so I have a tool called Hubble that provides flow visibility, so you can see IPv6 traffic going in internally and outside of the cluster. So yeah, and dual stack Kubernetes services, you can basically, as I mentioned, you can basically define if you want the service to be single stack or dual stack. So I'm not going to go into the details on that one. So yeah, and as a talk, perhaps, is IPv6 only. I've been running it for a while in some production clusters, and it works. You basically remove IPv4 at all. It's quite good. Remove nothing if you're on a public prefix. You don't have to worry about any nothing things there. Each pod gets a globally unique IP. So if you have like multiple clusters, you can pair them without any worries that there's an IP overlap, and we have end-to-end connectivity without any translation layers to IPv6 services. Enabling it in Cilium is just setting the IPv6 enabled to true and IPv4 enabled to false, and we set the IPv6 the underlying protocol to IPv6, and yeah, you can get started, simple as that. Have like a small how you can install it using K3S and Cilium. I'm going to publish the slides afterwards, so you can get it from there if you want. This is basically using nothing on IPv6, so you can run it on your laptop or like a small VM without any issues. kind of small, I guess, but you can see that each pod here has some IPv6 address, and also the services has an IPv6 address. Then talking about IPv4 only services, from as we mentioned, like services like GitHub doesn't support IPv6. So if you want to have like a cluster to talk to things like GitHub, you need to have some sort of layer between. It can be a web proxy like Squid, or it can be a registrar like Harbor that can use pull to the cache, or it can use something called NAT64. This is back to nothing, can't really get rid of it completely, but at least, yeah, and that basically means that you can have a client on IPv6 only talk to IPv4 services. Doing it in production, at like I've been like a small startup where they was like you just do it and everyone is happy. Been at larger enterprises where there's a lot of getting the rest of the organization on board can be a lot of work because people are preferring to use IPv4. They don't like it. It's for them it's new and complex and they don't see the need for it. And yeah, especially large enterprises that have like a big pool of IPv4 or the SAS, like they don't see the need at all. Many apps and libraries still assume an IPv4 address, so it's like it crashes when it starts up because it doesn't find an IPv4 address. Kind of common to see. Managed services, especially in the cloud providers, like some of them only support IPv4, so you don't kind of stuck again. And lots of tooling may lag behind in IPv6 support, it won't support IPv4, and yeah, there's a lot of issues like that. So yeah, with that, I think I'm done. So if there is any questions, I have a few minutes left, I think.
Hey, you shared on a previous slide that you suggested using a /60 prefix, and then that would allow you to have 16.
Yeah, that was just an example, but yeah.
Okay, my question is going to be, how would you feel, and don't shoot me for asking, if you use something smaller than /64 for a node, if you've got one service running, I don't think there's going to be any issue. I'd go for something with the Docker documentation used to say use a /86.
Yeah, the IPv6 world kind of wants you to never go smaller than a /64. That's like, so there's a lot of this discussion around it. As I mentioned also on like the, a /64 is mostly seen as like one public IPv4 address in like terms of like things like rate limiting and that kind of things. So that's a benefit to having 64, but you can go smaller. There's no issues with going smaller. And a lot of examples also say that you should go smaller. So this is just me, the way I deployed a cluster here. But yeah. And a /60, it like, might seem like a lot of IP addresses. If you have like a /29 as an enterprise, you have like billions of like 6/60s. So you can go way, way bigger if you want without even noticing it in your address space. On the word,
so thank you for your talk. A very naive question, maybe. Although I do like IP version 4 and prefer it to IP version 6 before IP version 4. Normally, if you have operated Kubernetes cluster, you put a load balancer in front of it.
Yeah.
Right? So you're normally not directly accessing the nodes or the pods. So besides being modern, what is actually the benefits? Because for IP version 4, I still have like with a 10/8, I have enough IP addresses for all my pods for
yeah. And for to be honest, there's no, you shouldn't go and change all the clusters to IPv6 only today. And the dual stack, as I mentioned, adds a lot of complexity. So running dual stack clusters might not be beneficial because there's basically none.
Okay.
And I didn't mention like how do you get clients into a cluster, because there's no real load balancer to support both at an or a CBN that's in front that support both stacks. But one of the benefits I've seen is that we did have to cluster bring two clusters together, and they were running the same IP space. That would fix it for running an IPv6 cluster mostly. If you're running public, you are guaranteed that your pod is unique.
So, for example, if you do a WireGuard mesh with Xelium between two Kubernetes clusters, you don't have the issue of the clashing IP ranges, which is a pain in the ass.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. This is something I understand. Okay.
Yeah, and there also is the benefit you don't have not on these two IPv6 other services. But
we can do one more question real quick, but can the next speaker please show up at the front?
Thank you. So two quick questions. One of them, so you talked about the routing for shoving a prefix at the pods. Have you investigated whether you can use DHCP v6 PD to automate that so you don't have to faff with manually setting routes?
I haven't investigated that, but on the first using BLP, it's like you get the failover between the nodes, and so if a node goes down, it will basically, and all of them are advertising your prefix, but I haven't tested that after using DHCP on it, so
okay.
I don't know.
And the other one was, you made mention of NAT66, why, when it shouldn't be used at all?
The issue there is like because you have to route the prefix into a node somehow using something like using BGP, and then if you don't have that support, if like on your new laptop you want to run a cluster, you don't necessarily have a public prefix on your, so using something like NAT66. I guess. Yeah.
Sorry for the rush. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.